The Creative Writer's Way.
Writing is fundamental. It is our way. From stories come history. From history comes belonging. From belonging comes a sense of where we were, where we are, and where we are going. This is the foundation of civilization.
This is Dr. Schuyler Madison. Find your story at SchuylerMadison.com. This is Dr. Schuyler Madison Fontana, and you are listening to The Creative Writer's Way. This show is designed to provide you with insights and help on how to engage your creative side through writing and telling your stories. And today we will be talking with Mitchell Rabin, founder of the radio and TV show A Better World. Hello, Mitchell. How are you?
Hello, Schuyler. I'm well, thanks. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I thought if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to us and giving us some of the highlights of your really interesting, fascinating work in life.
Oh, my. Sit down. Okay. As Steve Martin said, I started as a little black boy. And no, I'm kidding you. I'm originally from Forest Hills, although I grew up in Southern Connecticut, in Westport, Connecticut. And I went into the field of psychology originally, and then Chinese medicine, acupuncture, because I was so interested in the body-mind connection, which back then was not very popular, except if people were paying attention to Wilhelm Reich. But he was pretty much the only person who was really very active in the field of psychology in integrating the mind and the body. So this was my way of doing it. And so I've been a practicing psychotherapist and acupuncturist for a few dozen years. And I don't use needles anymore. I use a biofeedback system these days for the past many years that reads the energy bodies of the field of the energy fields, I'm sorry, of the body and energy bodies, you could say. And it gives me basically stress potentials of what it is that's going on with the person. And so, you know, I see clients who are couples and families and individuals, and I work with them in a rather number of ways, and sometimes that has included writing and journaling and using the creativity expressed in writing and the self-expression especially that goes with it inside of a person's psyche and heart and putting that on the page. So I've got this whole part of my life that is what I just described, the healing aspect, and then I've got the media, which is what you said at the beginning, the weekly radio and TV shows here on Blog Talk Radio.
Getting the word out there. Yeah.
And getting the word out there and broadcasting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. If you don't mind, I'd like to just zero in on that notion of, you know, I know that in your background you have taught creative writing as what you would call a spiritual discipline.
Yes.
And, of course, there's a lot of research. Pennebaker was one of the ones that, you know, was kind of at the beginning of that as expressive writing as a way of, you know, releasing negative emotions. And, in fact, some of the research I did suggested that Freud developed talk therapy based on research that he did about how helpful writing could be. So then he just said to himself, well, why can't we just be talking instead of writing?
Oh, interesting.
And talk therapy emerged from that. But what is your experience about creative writing as a spiritual discipline? Because it's not often positioned like that.
Yes. Well, first of all, I would say that writing, from this kind of larger therapeutic point of view, Schuyler, has a few different functions. One is the expression of, as you just said, negative emotions. So freeing up the musculature, the emotional body, the mind from areas of contraction, of confusion, of obsession, of concern, of conflict, is one really clear and obvious way of venting and freeing oneself up and letting go. So there's that feature, which is great, emotional catharsis, if you will. then when I import the word spiritual, which is a very kind of generic word, honestly, and for me it typically refers to one's psychosomatic, in the true sense, psycho-emotional state of mind and being. It's a very inclusive, systemic, holistic way of thinking about the entirety of a human being in the context of their environment, which, of course, for us all, from the larger landscape, is the planet Earth, for some it's this corner of the cosmos. When we embark on writing there, I sort of see the emotional catharsis as sort of step one. It sort of is clearing the field for a next step, which is the freedom to be imaginative. And, you know, I've often said in my classes, Skylar, that our gift of the imagination is essentially our gift from God. And sometimes I even have some fun playing with, what is the distinction between imagination and God really anyway? And I let people ponder that, including myself.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we might be. I'm sorry?
I call it the creative unconscious. That's my.
The creative unconscious, right. Okay. That's much safer. I'm out on a limb here. That's okay with me. I've gotten used to it. I think people could be hard-pressed about really coming up with the difference. But as I said, that would be for another theological conversation we might have someday. But in the meantime, regarding writing, I would say that with that field cleared, people's unconscious begins to speak and come forward with imagery, with poetic phrases, with metaphor, with a philosophical perspective, with an existential perspective, something deeper, something more resonant in their heart and soul. And so hence the word spiritual discipline. And they begin to hone that and come forward with that. Then there's even a third component that I would say. That's really the beginning of that freer, spacious, imaginative landscape. But then the next component is beginning to actually shape a future. This is my way of thinking about it. Shaping a future means that you've got the component parts of creativity sort of cooking inside oneself. It's brewing. And then one, with one's imagination again, begins to sort of assert what one would like to see for oneself in this life, in this world. And through that action, they're beginning to actually take the first step toward the materialization of those goals. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of the whole spiritual discipline character of this.
And then that there is this saying, they say we are the stories we hear and the stories we tell. And
exactly. And
that this is definitely the psyche is wired to respond to story. It's just the
That's the way that
we think and process. But when you say creative writing, are you pretty much leaving this to fiction or just any type of writing?
No.
Just creative?
No, it does not have the I think that we would also be hard-pressed to come up with the very clear distinctions between fiction and nonfiction these days anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In a world of fake news, no. World where there's a blurring of distinctions, which, by the way, I don't think is a good thing at all. But I also like there's a whole genre of writing these days that's becoming more and more popular of taking what is the basis of a true story and elaborating on it for making certain thematic, archetypal points. And
exactly.
I think that's
and if
kind
I could add
cool.
to that.
Please.
I think that that's really interesting because oftentimes true stories can have the markers of what really makes a story, but sometimes it has to be schmooze, so to speak.
Yes,
so that it
yes.
fits into what we consider to be a story that's really engaging, which to me I would define as something that involves an empathetic protagonist with a goal where there's conflict, and somehow
mm-hmm.
through that conflict, the protagonist learns something, and as a result of it is able to overcome the conflict, and the story gets resolved. Now, not every
yes.
true story fits within the context of that structure,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
that is, I think, really interesting, too, because I agree that also writers are obviously writing what they know and what they care about, but a lot of, you know, like I think it was Stephen King said, and it's funny that he would say this, every character is either someone you know or someone you know of
yeah.
in some way, in
yes.
his book on writing.
yes.
But
yes.
so we're writing from our personal psychology and fictionalizing it to a
yes.
certain extent when we're writing fiction. And that's why the term fiction itself, I think, is a little misleading.
yes, it is.
Right.
You know, you're reminding me of an experience I had, an inner experience, when I was going to college. I went to Bard College, and I actually
right.
went there to study. My wish was to study parapsychology as a means of proving the existence of God. And
oh, my God. That is amazing. Oh, my God. That is amazing. Well, you know, you're doing
well,
a dissertation on parapsychology, on psychic powers. That's, he,
oh
that's what he did his dissertation on. I know.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know what
that.
They say about great minds, or what they're
yeah,
saying about one mind, actually. Yeah, I believe that if we could prove the existence of telepathy and its mechanisms and all, we could show that there really is sort of like one mind, which is the idea of God, you know, one being,
right.
you know, that we're all sort of
exactly.
part of. Yeah.
And that's
anyway.
What he would call the collective unconscious.
Yes.
That was his word for it.
Yes.
to
right.
which we are all connected. Right.
That's right. That's right. And
so I'm going to take.
I wasn't able to do that
to
because Bard did not have a parapsychology department, and I found myself, in order to study psychology, I was sort of following rats in a maze and looking at statistics, which I had no
okay.
interest in at all. However,
yeah.
my teachers in literature were very, one of whom was very Jungian oriented. And very spiritually / esoterically oriented. And I found that
That's
I was
young.
Learning
yeah.
a lot more about human nature and human behavior studying literature, i.e. fiction, than I was in the psychology department. So
interesting. Well, that's one of the reasons at the school that I went to, Pacifica Graduate Institute, there you can get your PhD in myth. And it's right there, you know, next to Jungian psychology. And, you know, obviously Jung was very influenced by myth. And but there's this, I'd like to veer you in this direction just for a second and see what you think about this. This notion that creative people are somewhat neurotic, Steve Jobs being the poster child for that. And when you think about it, to be a good fiction writer or to really, you know, delve into that world, a lot of it's what-ifing and just that capacity to almost think about all the negative things, you know, it's kind of like, there's this saying that you put your protagonist up at a tree and you throw rocks at them. And so you have to kind of have that ability to think like, oh, what could go wrong? What could go wrong? And that the fiction writer that they're able to do that. Do you
yes.
have any comments on, but I also think it's an outlet for that because at the end of the day, there's this kind of, I don't want to say happy ending, but closed ending where it gets resolved. And what do you think about that, the creative writing? I mean, that the neurotics and creative people.
Well, I know there's a whole literature about that. And I like telling the joke that Woody Allen says at the end of classic movie Annie Hall, where he goes to a psychiatrist and he says, Doc, my brother, he's crazy. He thinks he's a chicken. And the psychiatrist says, well, why don't you bring him in for treatment? And he says, I can't. I need the eggs.
Exactly.
So, you know, so when it comes to the use of the word neurosis,
yeah,
Skylar,
yeah.
I think
right.
that we're all sharing in the eggs. And I know that's not
it.
A very psychotherapeutic thing to say. However, I do think that it's true, and I think that we're better off for owning it. So the person who does the creative fiction writing that you're referring to might have a couple more eggs than the rest of us. That might be true.
In touch with their eggs, you know.
Yeah, in touch with their eggs. Right. Oh, that's funny. That's good. So that idea of, you know, throwing rocks into the tree that the protagonist is like nesting in is kind of funny. And it sort of brings forward more of a reptilian aspect of our psyche, this basic fear-based, survival-based, what if, what can go wrong, who done it kind of thing, which I think is a perfectly important part of our brain system. But it's not the one that I like to cultivate. I personally am much more interested in cultivating the finer and farther reaches of the neocortex, and I think in my worldview, the heart is the most advanced of all the brain systems, and I do think of the heart as a brain. So I think that there's a whole exploration that can be done in that direction that I think is way more interesting than looking at the different ways a rock can land on my head.
Well, it's just a kind of a way of looking at how we construct a story where we get the protagonist up a tree. Okay, so you're up a tree, so already that's getting to be a little bit of a problem. And then you throw rocks, you know.
That's right. No, I get it. I get it. I think it's got a lot of validity to it, by all means. And what you're also outlining is the idea that there has to be a protagonist and an antagonist and a conflict therein that by story's end will have resolved in one way or another, and then we follow the hero's journey through that process and develop empathy, identity, compassion, hopefully a little patience, you know, appreciate the virtue, right? Is that...
Yeah. I mean, I think the point is this is how we quote-unquote hook the reader, and this is just an archetypal structure that naturally will hook you in because you care. You want to know what's going to happen next.
That's
and you're
right.
on the ride. You're in the shoes of the protagonist. So it's as
Absolutely.
If it's happening to you. That's the thing that's so magical about storytelling to me.
Yes. Yes. Oh, no, I get it. I get it. And, you know, it's very true. I mean, we're living in a world where a lot of stories are being told through films, you know. That's the main place, stories and TV shows as well. But we've become a very visual, highly visual culture. And these are the ways that people are oftentimes communicating and experiencing the communication. So that in itself is an interesting wrinkle in the original archetype of the storyteller. You know, his or her means is changing.
Well, you know, if you go back to Aristotle, he really had it right. And he basically said it's pity and fear. Those are the two emotions that you want to invoke. And obviously a lot of the Greek tragedies did that.
Yes.
But there's a reason for that, you know. And then the three-act structure that he outlined is pretty much, you know, what I said in terms of how the story unfolds. But I'd
you
like
know,
to ask you something.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just
In
gonna
terms
say,
of your advice,
So this is an archetypal and classic structure that you just described, which we know has efficacy. We know because we're the products of stories, right, as you were saying in the beginning, which is just an elegant comment, and I really appreciate it. And I'm reaching beyond. I am looking at what would life be like on an entirely different plane where we were not referring to pity and fear, where we were looking at the higher realms and degrees of other types of emotion and where that can possibly bring us. And this is a totally unexplored area right now because let's just say that there are many degrees of love. Let's just say, I mean, we have it all wrapped up in romantic love or in parental love and sometimes divine love. That's pretty much as far out as we may go, typically. But I would be interested in exploring what the details are. What does it look like? What does a deeper level of compassion or empathy look like? I'm in unknown territory. It's sort of like learning Chinese when all you have are the romance languages, you know, or English. You know, it's a different world. It's like a different terrain.
Well, that's the thing, Mitchell. The research studies that they've done show that people who read books and people who, you know, are engaged with stories, they develop more empathy and compassion. It's almost as if that process of getting into someone's story will help you to develop more empathy and compassion. And and as a writer, too, I think that
I think that's so
part
true.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there again, we're relying on the, and you know, and believe me, it works. And I know it, I've used it where, you know, especially fear, which leads to frustration, which can lead to anger and any number of these other, you know, so-called negative emotions, really wrap us up. You know, we really all identify, or in the search for justice, there are certain, you know, fundamental themes that really tend to grab the heart and squeeze it, right?
Yeah, and it's also the resolution of it. It's like a quote-unquote an ending that feels satisfying, you know, and what that means. Because if we just invoked pity then fear and we didn't resolve it, all we would get is disturbed.
Exactly.
And agitated.
Exactly.
And that's not what it's about.
That's right.
So
no, you need, it's like in music. Can you imagine if there's just a dissonant chord that lasts for, you know, 10 minutes, you'd go crazy, you know? Yeah,
I'll bet if you did some biofeedback on the person, you'd see that their stress levels have increased.
That's correct.
You know, if you did something like that. So
that's right.
Writing can be stressful, too. And many people who are writers can, you know, kind of relate to this. The process itself, the creative process, has been proven to also include, you know, some kind of increase in stress. And it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's just part of it.
Sure.
I was wondering if you have any advice on how a writer or creative person navigates the stress that's part of the creative process.
Great question. Great question. You were implying a distinction that's really important between stress and how we look at it. And, you know, of course, you know, one person's stress is another person's, you know, play. So we have to recognize, number one, the very, in fact, purely subjective nature of what it is we refer to as stress. And
excellent.
I always make the point to my clients and to my students that stress is a good thing. You need stress. You die without it. Hans Selye. Selye, considered the father of stress, but that should probably be Adam would be the father of stress. But anyway, that's a different conversation.
You like to go back to that.
Yeah, right. That's a longer view. Hans Selye said that there's something called eustress, E-U stress, which is a good stress. So he made that distinction. Mm-hmm. So if you think about lifting weights, I use this image all the time. If you do not lift weights that are heavy enough to cause stress in your muscle, those muscles will not break down in order to rebuild.
No pain, no gain.
Exactly. You got it?
Yep.
So same thing with stress. Stress is a part of the creative process. And if a person isn't
exactly.
experiencing any, they're not going to be writing anything very interesting. So,
that's really well said.
It's a
it
good
creates,
thing.
Yeah.
We want to be on the lookout, Skylar. We want to be on the lookout for what I refer to as excess stress. When we've gone into the domain of excess, that's when we start to run into possible, you know, immune difficulties, physical issues, et cetera, et cetera. And that we do want to mitigate, modify, neutralize.
So it implies as if there is some discerning capacity within ourselves to be able
yeah.
to just deal
yep.
with it. And certainly if we're creators, we understand or need to understand that it's actually that uncertainty and that stress that stimulates the psyche to go to work for you and help
exactly.
you to, you know, it partner in this process to
exactly.
solve the problem. And that's what
right.
I have found.
And, that's right.
And you just kind of trust the process, I guess, is
yeah.
another way to say
yeah.
it, you know,
yeah.
without
And I would say that we have a certain witness intelligence that if we feel we're going too far in any one direction, we should probably still challenge ourselves a little bit even then, but realize that we're in a certain zone and be ready and willing to come back quickly.
Yes, excellent. All right, thank you so much for this. And I would love to, you know, hear about anything that you're doing right now in terms of any workshops or any where people can learn more about you, your website.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I have two websites now, MitchellRabin.com, MitchellRabin.com, which is the website that describes my healing work with counseling and coaching and biofeedback, and the individual, couples, family, and consulting. To, you know, I've dealt a lot with CEOs and executives to help them, because at the end of the day, we're dealing with communications, and it doesn't matter really what the context is. It's understanding the context and helping people, facilitating smoother, more authentic communication, and that's what I spend a lot of time doing. So there's that. And then my media website, which is www.abetterworld.tv, abetterworld.tv, and people can hear the radio shows and podcasts and all of that and a bunch of other things I have there. So that's what's happening now, Skylar.
It's been your work to me. You and I have been on parallel tracks, because I was looking at your background, and you had Center for Creative Wellbeing, and I had Center for Wellbeing. And
oh,
I guess this was early 2000.
That's
I know
so
we,
funny.
You and I, and I almost
wow.
went to Bard. You and I have been kind of on
really?
Parallel
you almost
tracks,
went to Bard.
yeah.
Really? Where did you go, Sarah Lawrence?
No, I went to NYU.
NYU, okay, that's nearby.
That's
yeah, oh, that's so
theater,
funny. Yeah,
theater
we've been
major,
on a
actress.
Yeah, we've been on a very parallel track. I had Center for Creative Wellbeing back in 1989, using flotation tanks, using acupuncture, using what I call a sound womb. I've been very much cutting edge, so to speak.
Cutting edge. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm so out of the mold, and I like it that way.
I love it.
I found
Me
the
too.
Mold I getting know. A little moldy.
Oh, it's great. It's what keeps life exciting, I think, to
truly,
be on the cutting
truly.
Edge. And it just
oh, let me give my if I may, the email
Please.
Address and phone number. I forgot. Phone number is 212-420-0800. 212-420-0800, or email me. I'm on email a fair amount at mjr@abetterworld.net. My initials, mjr@abetterworld.net. So.
And an individual, if they want to work with you, they don't necessarily have to be physically present where you
no.
are. You can work with them. Right?
Most of my clients are by phone or Skype.
Exactly.
From literally all over the world. Yeah. Yeah, and the biofeedback, interestingly, also extends. It does not need for someone to be physically here.
Really? Okay, that's cutting edge.
Really? That's its own conversation.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share all of these, you know, very interesting stories and your wisdom with us.
Thank you,
and,
Skylar. What a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.
Have
finally connected, you know.
I know. After so much time, I had always been asking our mutual dear friend David Kastmeyer, what about Skylar? She looks so interesting here.
Okay. We're finally on the same page.
Exactly.
Not just parallel. Okay.
That's right. I'm so
all
glad.
Right.
Thank you for having
me. Mitchell.
A pleasure, and I'm
Thank
available
you for
anytime.
Joining.
Sure.
The Creative Writer's Way.
To touch the reader inside is to tap into where we live. It is common to us all. It is unique to us all. Finding that path is the hero's journey. The journey begins with you.
This is Dr. Skylar Madison. Find your story at skylarmadison.com.